I got a style for every bump in your face. Grease ball ass nigga, Pontiac judge, open and shut case. You know I'm bow tied till I die, though I made an exception for this 69. So quick off the line, call double side, no matter what. We heads up, we in the yard, tell your dogs they should be aware of us. We break it off like an engagement gone bad. I feel your jacuzzi with them groupies, make it a bird bad. Miss me? No, you didn't, bitch, with that bullshit. Miss me? Trying to claim, spill the name, trying to be miss me. All of that kicks to me, silly rabbit trickery.
Ooh. You only around right, because girl. My spot is where you very excited to be back. Welcome to the No Randoms Podcast. This is our first deep dive, shallow dive, medium dive in a little while. But we're here to talk about the metaverse, Web3, NFT, cryptos, blockchain, and what the hell all of that means. Does that sound good?
I'm excited.
I was able to successfully communicate and explain this to my mom, who y'all know, maybe not Marcus as well, but y'all know my mom pretty closely. She's born in the 50s, so she does. There's a steep learning curve, but I was able to successfully, you know, communicate and discuss what things like blockchain are and NFTs. So I think this little presentation will help us get there. But what I've been finding as I've been having more and more of these conversations, be it at work or in the industry, at home with my mom, or anywhere else with you guys, I'm finding that there's a lack of knowledge, or maybe a gap between the questions people are asking. So it's really interesting. We're seeing blockchain, NFTs, crypto, like the difference between the NFT craze and like Dogecoin. Those are like two different viral moments, like two different cultures and communities happening right now, which we know they're the same. But to the average consumer or whoever it is that's not, you know, fully up on this, those could be like literally separate things happening right now. And it's like, oh, this is all the same. And then Facebook becoming Meta and Metaverse and VR, like these could all become or feel like disparate concepts if you didn't understand that they're all tied together by the same technology, which is really, a way of thinking. So what I've continued to find is a lot of people aren't asking questions. Some people that are, you know, again, working in this space or are, again, professionals, or there's money on the line, basically. So that's what's really been blowing me away is like, you really gotta know how this works. It's your job. And then there's so many people that are asking me questions after the fact that I'm like, oh, you had no clue what's going on. So that brings us to this. I think it's fun. It's not a gaming topic, but it's 1000% a gaming topic. Like that's part of it here is like, if you think gaming and the metaverse and NFTs and block, if you think all that's different, you're wrong. So we'll dive in. But yeah, ask questions as we go. That's my thought, is any questions you guys have, other people have. So really ask them. I'm no one's expert, but I'm a solid Googler. So I've got some good data here. And whatever information we don't have, we can find. Cool.
Sounds good.
Love it.
Let's do this.
I just want to make sure this isn't similar to like Y2K, right? This is
almost exactly the same thing as Y2K.
Damn, I just dated sure myself.
Old ass.
No, it sounds good. Let's get into it. I'm excited.
As part of it here, right, before we can talk about the exciting avenues that the metaverse has opened up to us, we have to start with a shared understanding of the building blocks that make up our Web3 experience. So we'll start with, you know, what is Web3? And bear with me. I'll see how to pinch and slides here. Boom, easy. So Web3, to get there, it really helps for us to start at the internet, and then we'll move through kind of our phases, right? So Web3 is not as much a technology as it is a snapshot of where we are now and how we interact with the web, the internet, which is each other. So Web 1.0 was the first iteration of the web, right? We started with the internet there on the left. That's literally plugged in. That's LAN, right? So the early stages of the internet, we know the government, the US government, they had control of this. And it was the type of thing where, imagine you've got 1,000 computers and you plug them all into each other, right? Into a central database. We can now trade information. We're used to this like wireless not being in the same place system. But if you remember, like you said, Y2K, in the early days, in the web 1.0 days, that's literally what we did. We had to plug into a modem. Everybody had, you know, we're connected on the internet.
Right.
We're literally hardline connected into the same database. So, Web 1.0 was the first iteration of the web, right? Just after the connected internet itself. This is modems, phone lines. Most participants were consumers of content, and the creators were typically developers who built websites that contained information, served up mainly in text or image format. Web 1.0 lasted approximately from 1991 to 2004, to kind of give you guys a good idea of what we're talking about. So for me, that's even just before high school. Web 1.0 consisted of sites serving static content instead of dynamic HTML content. Data and content were served from a static file system rather than a database, and sites didn't have much interactivity at all. Right? You remember, like, this is the early days of Yahoo, NetZero. Remember, you go to Ask Jeeves, you'd go to one place, and it's like the information that you're going to get is already programmed in static. Think of it like a push, maybe Yahoo News. It's like a newspaper. We're going to write everything down and push it to you. So it's available. We had to plug in and we could get their content. No interaction there. This is a one-way conversation, right? From big companies to the masses. Web 2.0 was that next stage. That's when we really started to land interactivity. So it says, most of us have primarily experienced the web in its current form, commonly referred to as Web 2.0 or Web 2. You can think of Web 2 as the interactive and social web. In the Web 2 world, you don't have to be a developer to participate in the creation process. Many apps are built in a way that easily allows anyone to be a creator. So this comes from, we can talk about, remember MySpace and Zynga, when we could start to put some of our spin on it, some of our creativity and input. It was no longer one-way information flow. We were starting to consume information from each other, right? And so that's the early days, 2005, 2007, 2010. That comes all the way to the creator economy we find ourselves in now, right? Where most of the content consume actually comes from other people. So it's not the same thing, right? Think of in the old days, we had TV programs. We create the content. You guys all watch the same shows. This is why shows in the 90s, like a Seinfeld, will never happen again. Because now we have so many options. In those days, there was only a few creators, really expensive to create content, right? A huge barriers to entry, which means not just anybody can sign up and say, I want to create a Seinfeld. I have a great idea. Let's make a TV show. You had to have a ton of money and be connected, be in the United States and in Los Angeles, et cetera, et cetera. So again, where we are now, this Web 2.0 is a creator economy. It says here, Web 2 is simple. If you want to craft a thought and share it with the world, you can. If you want to upload a video and allow millions of people to see it, interact with it, and comment on it, you can do that too. This includes things like YouTube, right, where we can upload our content, YouTube, Instagram, but also something like Spotify, right? We create a song, I upload a song, and now millions of people can download it. But where'd that come from? You no longer have to have record labels, distribution deals. I can create music right, or whatever, right here, our podcast like we do, upload it to Spotify, instantly available to millions. That's Web 2.0. Web 3.0 is really exciting. That's what we're just now kind of branching into and where we've just opened the doors to. And again, some of this you guys are already experiencing, and we talked about it earlier. Many people are already living in this space really without understanding the difference. So, what is Web 3.0? There are a few fundamental differences between Web 2 and Web 3, but decentralization is at its core. That's what we're talking about here. NFTs, blockchain, all these new things, everything we're talking about here is based around decentralization. Cryptocurrency, none of this works if you don't have this concept of decentralization, right? Taking it away from one creator hub, right? So Web 1.0, I'm Yahoo, I'm creating content, I'm pushing it out. Web 2.0, I'm Instagram. You're creating content, you send it to me, then I can send it back out. But we still have one central, right? We don't have the money to create an Instagram. Web 3.0 is when we start to really spread things out. We're no longer going up to an intermediary and then back down. We're actually connected to everybody, right? There's no longer these individual behemoths where this starts to become truly decentralized. So we'll talk more about that.
Okay.
Web 3 enhances the internet as we know it today with a few other added characteristics. So again, just to talk through this slide, the key attributes of Web3 are it's verifiable, it's trustless, it's self-governing, it's permissionless, it's distributed and robust, it's stateful, and it's got native built-in payments. In Web3, Developers don't usually build and deploy applications that run on a single server or that store their data in a single database, right? Usually hosted on or managed by a single cloud provider. Instead, Web3 applications either run on blockchains or decentralized networks of many peer-to-peer nodes, right? This is really important because when we have one central hub, right, one database, we're in danger. So imagine there's one, you know, we're all banking at the same bank, right? Bank XYZ, whatever. And that bank has a database and someone can get in and hack that database. They can damage it, they can change it, they can alter it. That puts every single customer, every single person that's affiliated with that bank, and also customers that are like next level affiliated with the bank, right? Maybe I don't bank there, but I do business with you and you bank there. So if your money is gone, the money you owe me is gone. We're all in danger because there's one place you go to. It's like going into Fort Knox. You break into the safe, take all the money. Shit, all of our money was in the safe. This is very different because it spreads out, right? It's the knowledge of the many. So rather than having it in one place, it's spread out across the peer-to-peer networks, thousands, millions of people. So you can't go to one place and hack, alter, damage the information. You would have to effectively somehow touch everybody, right? Which is this is where the security comes.
A lot more complicated.
Yeah. We'll get deeper in this, but that's the differences, right? So internet, web 1.0, web 2.0, web 3, all about decentralization. When you hear decentralization, right? To achieve a stable and secure decentralized network, network participants are incentivized to compete and provide the highest quality services to anyone using the service. It will become really important to have the best, most trustworthy service, because that's actually what we're gonna vote on, right? We talk about this arms race. Where are people gonna go? Well, we choose where we're gonna go, and we're gonna go to the best service. So your incentive is not to build up as much capital; it's to build up the biggest user base, to have the most peer-to-peer interactions. So when you hear about Web3, you'll notice that cryptocurrency is often a part of the conversation. Crypto plays a big role in many of these protocols. It provides a financial incentive, right, tokens, for anyone who wants to participate in creating, governing, contributing to, or improving these projects themselves. Going to step into cryptocurrency and kind of build our way up. Any big questions right now?
No.
Not at the moment. I'm just thinking on some deeper shit.
We're getting Black Mirror. Oh, we're going to get there. So, cryptocurrency, right? This Bitcoin, Dogecoin, Shiba, whatever, Ethereum, these are all cryptocurrencies, right? And this is really important for us to understand. This is what's, again, at the base. We're stepping up. Web3 is the umbrella. Cryptocurrency is at the base, and this is what helps everything move. We got to have crypto, have to have an understanding of blockchain. So, cryptocurrency is a form of payment that can be exchanged online for goods and services. Like, again, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and so many more you've probably heard over the last few years. Many companies have issued their own currencies, often called tokens, and these can be traded specifically for the good or service that the company provides. Think of them, this is great, think of them the same way you would arcade tokens or casino chips. You need to exchange real currency for the cryptocurrency to access the good or service. Does that make sense? Like, I think for me, that's the key metaphor. Right, yeah. It's has value, right? Yeah, they have value, but you got to kind of trade it up before you can go and use this here for whatever we have, and then you can exchange it on the way out or not. We've all been there after a family fun center or whatever. You leave with a pocket full of coins, like I'll use these again, and like no, you won't. we're talking about Ozark now,
right?
Hold up. Scammers.
So, it sounds like we got cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrencies work using a technology called blockchain. So that's how we get there. On to the next.
Take me there.
A blockchain technology is a public digital ledger of transactions maintained by a network of computers in a way that makes it difficult to hack or alter. The technology offers a secure way for individuals to deal directly with each other without an intermediary like a government, bank, or other third party. The growing list of records called blocks is linked together in a chain, right? Using cryptography. So each transaction is independently verified by peer-to-peer computer networks, time-stamped, and added on top of the growing chain of data. Once recorded, the data cannot be altered. Blockchain technology is the fuel that will drive Mark Zuckerberg's concept of continuity of identity and objects, right? He didn't create that, but that's what we need for the metaverse to work. Those are the basis of his metaverse. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to metaverse in just a moment. Blockchain, again, really important. And in some of those metaphors that helped me, again, I was talking to my mom about it. It's like rather than keeping all transactions, again, like at our bank where they've got this record where you have to go back and you say, hey, how much did I owe you guys last month? Or how much did I spend on XYZ? You go into your bank and they've got this record, which is great and safe and secure. And we have the FDIC and insurance, et cetera. But again, what happened if they changed the information or if someone got in there to change the information? Everything relies on what they have. If your bank looked at you and said, you don't have any, Anton, you work at a bank. If they looked at you and they're like, oh, no money in here. And you're like,
pretty
no, nice. And you're like, no, there's money in there. I know it. I don't know. And they're like, yeah, no, there's not money in here. And you're like, no, go look at the records. And they're like, we have no records. The fuck, what are you going to do? Right? So the way blockchain works is rather than having one line of communication, I was explaining it to mom. It's like having a big group text with everybody, where rather than working one-on-one with your bank, you have a group text with everybody in the world, or everybody that's got the internet, or everybody that has a smartphone. And when you have a transaction, Kevin sent Anton $15, you send a group text to everybody. So it's got the time, the date, and they heard what the action was. And then we keep on building. So we've got this long group text that's got the information there. We can't go into everyone's phone and change what they got, right? We know once you send it, it's sent. So then if the bank went, no, you didn't send Anton $15, I could go, yes, I did. And if they went, well, our records don't show that, I'd go, yeah, you're going to have to call everybody. Because I've got a million records of that. We all wrote it down at the same time. Everybody involved in this project or everyone that banks at this bank, we all got the notification at the same time, timestamped it, ripped the page off, and put it down. So we can go back through this ledger at any time. And again, where we get the security from is that there are thousands or millions of this ledger, right? The blockchain is secure and it's unalterable because it builds on top of itself, right? The further and further we go, the more the information gets knocked down. So if I sent you $15 at 8 a.m. and then Javon sent you $20 at 9 p.m., once we're there, this 9 p.m. is stamped, everyone has that same information going back. So now you can't change it. You'd have to change the ones on top. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You have to change every single...
Yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah,
not
yeah,
only
yeah.
would you have to communicate to everybody at the same time, you'd have to change the information. So if there was something that... If there was one transaction that's like, that's different than what everybody else has, we can find that... This is where the security comes, right? Everybody has this time-stamped vertical chain that's horizontally shared across, again, thousands, millions... Whoever's included on that blockchain.
Okay.
Questions?
Deep, bro.
We're doing good.
No, okay. This is I'm excited right now because like this is probably the most I've learned and has been broken down to me since I'm trying to understand this whole blockchain and crypto at the moment. So
fantastic. I love it.
This is really important.
We're getting there. Let's get to metaverse now. So what is the metaverse? It's a lot. I love this diagram here, this metaverse ecosystem diagram. It's got metaverse gateways, avatar and identity. We'll get to it. So according to Matthew Ball, the venture capitalist who is literally writing the book on this as we speak, the metaverse is an expansive network of persistent, real-time rendered 3D worlds and simulations. Ball's metaverse should be able to maintain the continuity of identity, objects, history and payments, and can be experienced by an unlimited number of people at the same time, in which everyone will have their own sense of presence. So, by that definition, many metaverses already exist, and there are entire industries built around them, as you can see here, right? NBA 2K is a metaverse. Grand Theft Auto Online is a metaverse. Red Dead Redemption, or Red Dead Online, whatever that is.
Online.
These are all a metaverse, right? This includes, but is not limited to, metaverse gateways, games, avatar and identity platforms. That's everything from Memojis to Genies and in between, right? User interface and immersion platforms, social networks, play to earn, play to collect games. I know, Marcus, you're excited about those. Economic services, right? And then all the way into infrastructure.
Oh, yeah.
Something that's really important, again, questions there? That one's the clearest definition I've seen, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of one thing I'll go back to, I think that really is key and sticks out because you need all that criteria. But that part at the end where it says, in which everyone will have their own sense of presence, right? We see through our own two eyes. It's not like, hey, I'm going to hop in VR and then you guys can watch my stream. So we're all going to see what it's like to be me.
Right.
It's not being John Malkovich. We have our own presence when we go there. It's like going to that Travis Scott concert. We all load in independently. Technically, you all have your own experience. No one does it the same because you have autonomy. I can look from over here or I can look from over here. And everyone has access to the same platform, but no one will do it the same. Absolutely no one will ever do it the same. There is, our experiences are as unique as we are as human beings.
So dope.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
This is wild. I'm
Quick
so excited.
Note on the metaverse. And this one is like super, super important for people to understand. So again, what's so exciting about the many metaverses, is that we are already familiar with several of them. That have manifested in the form of video games. Hey, that's why we're here. Roblox, Fortnite, and NBA 2K are major players in this landscape, and new partners like The Sandbox and Decentraland identify as games or gaming platforms. Here's The Sandbox. We all know how important this is. This is where the metaverse is being experienced. The Sandbox Game is their at name. You see that? Mm-hmm. They call themselves, it says here, The Sandbox is a virtual gaming world where players can build, own, and monetize their gaming experiences.
That's so crazy.
Welcome to the metaverse. In the same sentences, it's the same exact thing. We can call it gaming world and players. We can call it metaverse and digital humans. Call whatever you want. The fact is, we're doing this and we've been doing it for a little while. Video games are the metaverse. It's our gateway. Yep, I say video games are how we experience the metaverse, right? Now, there are arcade games, don't get me wrong. Bejeweled, right? Words with Friends. These are arcade games.
Yeah.
That's fine. It's not the same thing as what we're talking about here when we're in the metaverse. No. So there are different types of video games. All video games are not the metaverse. That's not what I'm saying. But if you're experiencing the metaverse, you'd be hard-pressed to find me an option where I can't call it a game.
Yep.
Very true.
Cool.
Deadass, I already got four off the top of the dome, right, bro. I mean, we mentioned them earlier when you were talking about Red Dead. Like, damn, like those are sandbox games right there. You go in, you're trying to build, own, and monetize your gaming experiences.
Ark, any MMORPG, all of these things are,
was
right?
That new
We've
one,
been doing it for years.
Icarus?
New World. New World is
kind of thing of like, world. Like you said, 2K. Pro clubs, when you're just like doing those drop-in matches. You know what I mean? You're this character.
A little bit different, but yeah.
A little bit.
That's in that realm. Yeah, it's in that realm. And again, for a lot of these, it's like a hop and a skip to become a true metaverse, right? Like if you could take your pro clubs player and then they just gave us a city to walk around.
I was just saying that to
right?
David.
It's right there.
Just saying.
Yeah, like it's a hop and a skip, and again, we'll be there. So this starts to get fun as well. It's already fun, but even more fun. What are NFTs, right? I put here, so what about NFTs? Non-fungible tokens, NFT. Non-fungible, we covered tokens before from crypto, right? So NFTs are crypto. Non-fungible tokens. Non-fungible more or less means that it's unique and cannot be replaced with something else. For example, a Bitcoin is fungible. You trade one for another Bitcoin and you'll have exactly the same thing, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you sent me a Bitcoin and I had two, and I sent you one back, you couldn't be like, hey, this isn't the one I sent you. We don't know. Just like trading money digitally or in Venmo. If I sent you $5 in Venmo, great, thanks. This is just a number. Now, you could go and exchange that for cash, like hard cash. And if you had hard cash, then we could distinguish between which dollars are which. Then you could give me $5, and I could give you back a different $5, and you say, hey, hold on. This isn't the $5 I gave you, and I want the $5 I gave you. Right? We've got codes on, and this isn't the actual pieces of paper I handed to you. And you see the difference there? Even for that example, maybe there's some type of sentimental value to it, right? Maybe we've got $2 bills, but this one I got from my grandpa, and I want that one back, right? They're you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're non-fungible versus trading money digitally. Send me $2. I sent you $2. There is no way for us to understand or to identify. In fact, it doesn't exist. They aren't actual hard cash dollars. So, like we said, one Bitcoin for another, exactly the same thing. Another good example, a trading card, right? A one-of-a-kind trading card is non-fungible. If you trade a trading card for a different card, you'll have something completely different, right? We need that first edition. NFTs can be associated with easily reproducible items such as photos, videos, audio, and other types of digital files as unique items. They use blockchain technology to give the NFT a public proof of ownership. So remember we talked about this last time, how we stamp it and everybody can prove who owns what? This is very important. NFTs do not work without blockchain technology. If anybody has the picture and can print it out, how do I know who owns this ape? I don't know. I have the same picture. But then we get blockchain technology. It changes things, right?
Right.
So, one can copy a digital file as many times as they want, including the art that's included with an NFT. But NFTs are designed to give you something that cannot be copied. Ownership of the work. Though, the artist can still retain the copyright and reproduction rights, just like with physical artwork, right? It's like getting a painting. To put it in terms of physical art collecting, anyone can buy a Mona Lisa print. There's one right here. I could print this off my computer. But there's only one original, and we treat them differently, right? There's a reason this photo's back there and it hangs in the Louvre. This is the original. It's not the same thing. Does that make sense?
Yes, 100%. 100%.
Wonderful. That's a really important piece of this that I know a lot of people struggle with. It's the same thing as physical art. Why do we care about the original more? The original was created hundreds of years ago, right? We're going to Sistine Chapel. It's one thing to see the art. It's a different thing to have and own the art. I could be the owner of the Mona Lisa and let it hang in the Louvre, right? It's in a museum in Paris. That doesn't make me not the owner. It's still mine. I own it, and I can sell it, and I can transfer the rights, and nobody else can do that. Even though there are millions and millions of prints and versions and images of the Mona Lisa, doesn't mean you own it.
That's a hard-ass photo right there, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
That hard, hard body.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get into some more good stuff here. So how do we use all this new tech? And this is where it starts to get into businesses and people and brands. And so this is kind of a part two to this discussion. Product, right? Blockchain-based tools allow us to bend and ultimately recreate the rules of product creation. Let's see. Through the metaverse, we can monetize heritage, product technologies, and presence to sell new and existing products to relevant and desiring consumers. You guys know this, we've talked about it a lot. Everything we talk about in our deep dives as gaming topics are really and truly metaverse topic. Like that's right where we are, right? Possibilities like testing and learning about new products without ever having to actually manufacture or selling reactive, we talked about this, selling reactive products that circumvent supply chains are really incredible, right? So imagine X team wins, Lewis Hamilton wins the title, and Mercedes wants to put out a championship jacket, shirt, hoodie, piece of item, right? Well, we have to go and manufacture, and again, if you don't know he's going to win, we've all seen those like Super Bowl champion t-shirts for the team that lost, that end up somewhere else. And that's what happens is companies traditionally just eat that. We're going to manufacture 500,000 of these t-shirts, but we're going to do it even though we know one of these teams is going to lose because it's so valuable to have them the day they win. Because people are going to go, we've all seen that, like, buy the LA Dodgers, you know, right commemorative after. Pin set right after. In order for that to work and ship it to people on time, they have to already have those produced, right?
Right.
But in this world, I could ship you a championship hoodie that's exclusive for my members, right? For the biggest fan of the LA Dodgers the minute we win. And I can customize it from there. I can make it for you. We could have a quote. You know what I mean? You could have a quote from one of the players at the end. You could put it on a shirt immediately. This type of product creation and flexibility is completely unheard of, right? Prior to where we are now. But this is really cool, right? Because it's not just releasing a product. If we just put it out there, anybody could copy. We've seen Roblox or we've seen our avatars. Anyone could copy and put it on their person. Not if we have blockchain technology. You're actually buying a piece of what happened. You could actually go and buy that hoodie. Now it exists in the metaverse, but you actually own it, right? You see the difference between what anybody can copy and what we can actually provide to you? It creates value. Again, I covered this already here, but we can monetize heritage. Again, I think I talk about this a lot. These avatar companies, they really can't do it without us. When we get to activation and engagement, that gets really exciting. blockchain and the metaverse have unlocked completely new avenues for everyone to authentically activate and engage in moments alongside the culture they support and believe in, right? So from virtual coaches to online music festivals, the new spaces are ready for brands, content creators, all of us really, to make them our playground. And it's kicked in the door to new media possibilities. You guys have heard me talk about this forever, right? Illuminating a massive relevance white space when it comes to ad spend in this landscape. Which means the opportunity to tell stories that resonate on the platforms that matter has never been more apparent, right? Imagine for just a moment, and you guys have heard me say this before, but imagine having like a billboard, right? Like a digital billboard in the NBA metaverse, NBA 2K, for an entirely captive audience that we know loves basketball and whose habits and brand affinities we can actually track. How much time have you spent in the NBA store versus in swags? What items did you buy? I can say Javon, I saw our billboard. He looked up at it for 30 seconds and he likes to buy Steph Curry shoes. And he wears an NBA headband and a three-quarter sleeve. That's insane coming from a business perspective. So the opportunities are really special and truly only growing from there. When we talk membership, blockchain-fueled services like Loyal have turned the world of membership completely on their head. We have to consider something like this. Let me pull my slide up here. There it is. Using proprietary blockchain and smart contract technology, these platforms bring a host of benefits to a highly fragmented industry and offer brands an innovative way to unlock the billions of dollars in value held captive in legacy loyalty programs. Bear with me for just a minute. This one is like very business specific, but you'll understand it immediately. Like once it clicks, it's like, oh yeah. So the average US household participate in some 29 different loyalty programs. Is this in here? Yeah. Some 29 different loyalty programs, according to the biennial 2015 loyalty census. The result is a maze of point systems and redemption options together with cumbersome processes for exchanging points among program partners. Loyalty programs are ripe for innovation that would make them easier to use. I don't know about you guys. I am a part of so many membership loyalty pro. I have a ton. The ones that come to mind, like Adidas and Nike, but also like Panera Bread. I'm a Panera Bread member. I'm a Starbucks member. All these different, right? Xbox Game Pass, I'm a member. PlayStation Now, even Disney Plus. All these things are memberships. All these recurring, right? All these are memberships that we have. And they come with benefits, right? Like they come with points and things you can spend. I know at Panera, over time, I gain enough points, I can get like a free bagel or something like that. And again, for Adidas and companies like that, the more you spend, you reach like icon status and you get discount. Now, I don't because I'm an employee, but you get discounts and you get perks or a free pair of socks, right? We're all familiar with these things. What's really interesting is that, and we'll move on to the next one. What's really interesting is that actually creates a huge hurdle. So not only is it a nightmare for consumers, like we don't like them, but like we don't like them, we don't use them, we don't understand them. They're all very fragmented. I'm not super concerned about this free bagel, right? But it also is a huge liability for brands because all of those, imagine even if there's a free bagel, right, at Panera Bread, and we've got 500,000 members that have that free bagel sitting in their loyalty program, and they expire different times. If for some reason all of those customers went to go cash out their bagel at the same day, not only would it smack our supply chain, but it's a huge accounting risk, because those, even if they're 50 cents, even if they only cost 50 cents, multiply that by 500,000, right? Now we're talking about $250,000. That could potentially at any time hit our balance. Like it could hit our balance sheet or not. It's this huge liability of this like not trackable money, right? Mm-hmm. That could or could not, like, so when it comes to the end of the year, when you have to balance your dollars, you can't account for that money. It's technically sitting in there. Like that's why we have to have membership programs that expire, right? So that we can effectively effectively perform our accounting measures, but that results in a really clunky experience, because then I get back and I have this stupid free bagel and I haven't been to Panera in 6 months and I'm here and, well, now it's expired. Fuck Panera, I'm going somewhere else, right? You end up having a really negative experience for reasons that make a lot of sense on the business side. So you see here, current state where we're trying to get to. So a frictionless system that allows us, this is what blockchain creates, a frictionless system that allows us to create membership programs as unique as the members themselves, while insulating brands from the balance sheet liability, that is those unredeemed options, right?
No random.
So if I'm Panera and I have a membership deal that works with, you can also redeem our points at the Marriott, right?
Right.
Okay. So that's like incentives for our members. Now the Marriott might have more partners where they work with a bunch of brands, but I don't know them because they don't have a partnership with Panera. They have a partnership with the Marriott. So that's this partner two in the yellow there in the middle. Now where we're trying to go is really exciting. With blockchain, right? This is where we get to that frictionless system I was just mentioning. For consumers juggling an array of loyalty programs, blockchain could provide instant redemption and exchange for multiple loyalty point currencies on a single platform. With only one wallet for points, consumers would not have to hunt up each program's options, limitations, and redemption status. Hang in there. If we convert our membership points into tokens, it opens up an entirely new world, right? And because it's blockchain verified, we're no longer stuck with our database and the Marriott's database and Panera's database. We can all share this information. It's all in the blockchain. So it creates this environment where I can give you membership points and you can spend them wherever you want, right? So it takes it off our balance sheet, but also it makes it so that we actually want to use it. Imagine a system where my experience is with Panera and the Marriott and Adidas and Starbucks and the MTA, right? Imagine if you could share benefits. Imagine if you could get discounts or points toward your subway rides in New York City based on how much you shop at Panera or how many coffees you buy. This is a system that's now truly possible, right? Only right, blockchain. Through blockchain technology.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's as far...
like you said, all this shit separated with the Netflix and the Disney Pluses and who... Like, I just looked last night and I noticed I'm playing for HBO and my wife's paying for HBO. What I mean? Like, just trying to keep track of it all. But to know that, like, yeah, if you can have them benefit each other, like, we'll go so far.
Be able to tie it all in. And so what happens is that rather than having a membership program where it's like, all right, I can pick the membership that get like I can pick Disney Plus that gives me Disney and ESPN and National Geographic, right, where they bundle for us, I can bundle the way I want to. I want National Geographic and ESPN, but I don't need Disney Plus. I would like maybe G4 TV like we talked about, right? And I want Netflix, so we can start to create membership bundles truly as unique as the members themselves. We can all participate in these things and we can customize on our own. And again, it becomes a huge business benefit on the back end because now we can actually do our accounting, which is, to me, I'm like, yeah, sure, knock yourselves out. But to the accountants out there, they're like, oh my God, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
So again, that's about as far out as I'm gonna get it. You guys made it with me through the membership topic. Like, that's as deep and complicated as this gets, and I know for a fact you guys get it because we just kicked around ideas.
That was dope.
I'm excited.
That was dope.
No, that was.
Oh, I'm really happy you guys like it. It's so much talking, and I'm like, is this landing? Is this cool?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, it landed.
It's crazy to me because when we hopped in, how I talked about the game that I found, it's a massive online like multiplayer game. It honestly, I thought of you and like you talking about this just had my mind just thinking about it already. Like, damn, this has been going on for at least 20 years. If you're not aware of it, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, no, that's why I was gonna wait to get into it, but you know, that was such a good way of explaining
right.
it.
Right, for like, sure.
I feel like when even like blockchain with my mom, to somebody I was else, like, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm excited to explain really blockchain.
Yeah.
yeah. I'll send these to you guys too. But that, like, that's what you really need. Or I guess you have the pod. But what we really need, is an understanding of blockchain, and then it unlocks so many other things. And it's like, now I understand why you guys care. But again, the major takeaway, like we've discussed before, is the IP, is the culture, is the community. You cannot have it without. A whole bunch of people have billions of people have painted before.
Right.
We don't care about all paintings. If we find a new Basquiat, it's a big deal because of him. not because of the medium, not because of the tech. The technology he used was oil on canvas, right?
Right.
Nobody cares about oil on canvas. We care about what you did with it. So we're not just buying NFTs because NFTs exist. The yacht club, right? All the apes, the Bored Ape Yacht Club that everyone's seeing, it's art, right? And they're becoming even more valuable because they're the first viral NFT. So in a hundred years, you can go, oh, no, the first art wave in non-fungible technology was Bored Ape Yacht Club. That's why it's important, right? Just like going back to the Sistine Chapel or the Mona Lisa, people can paint that way now, but at that time, that was the most important creative expression.
Right.
And for that reason, it holds incredible value to us hundreds of years later. So again, brands exist here, cultures exist here, but it's not going to be this space where it's like, oh, Revenge of the Nerds, like all the tech guys got it. I'm not saying some of them won't make money. It's just like with the internet. Sure, people are going to make their money, but the culture still lives and rules here, right? Like the culture is what is going to drive everything. And it's the most democratic platform for the culture to exist, period. Right? Barriers to entry are so far removed that this is where we can truly start to express ourselves. So individuals like ourselves, and again, the creatives of the future, are going to get really busy with this. And it's really exciting for what it will become. But we are not slaves to the tech. This is all about the culture. Everything is art. It's always going to be art.
Yeah.
Great dive, bro.
That's dope.
That's dope, man. Yo, imagine it. The year is 2070. You're in the metaverse with your grandkids. You guys go to a museum, and there's a bunch of mutated monkeys on the wall.
That's me.
That's the start of this all, y'all. Right there. Yo, monkeys. That's the start of the way. From the rocking chair improves, but I've yet to see a team fucking with the crew. Near fall, I saw it all. Wide frame, everything with wings ain't a plain man. And don't get rolled up like car windows, avoiding the policeman's damn car Winslows. The wind blown in change, and I am not mad. Old garbage bag rappers need to find a style fast. It's written all over.